the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. You're the USA Today NFL wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals, and we continue with the opponent preview series. Again, as I'm recording the 14 opponent preview shows, I don't know in what order they're recording out of order, so I'm not going to give you episode number on this one, but this one is one of my favorite every year because it is a longtime friend of the show and Kyle Madsen from Niners Wire, the site editor over there the last several years, and as you listeners, if you've been paying attention, you've heard Kyle many times a year because he comes on every year to preview the 49ers. We had him on a couple of times last year to talk about the two games against the Cardinals. Kyle, welcome back. It's always a pleasure as we wait out this very, very hard time to write content.
Oh, it's the worst. From like the middle of June through about now, because now's the time you can start doing training camp reviews. Yeah. And, you know, most of the free agents are all kind of scooped up, but there's a couple of names out there you can start writing about, and how do they fit or how would they fit. This is kind of the time of year where you go, okay, now we can get back. But man, that 3-week stretch from like the middle of June to the like first week of July is just brutal.
It is. It's the, and then the NFL networks, they keep pushing every year. They used to spread it out, their top 100 mm-hmm. players. At least you'd have some NFL network content, and June is about rankings and lists, and I know I don't like making them. I like writing about them, but I don't like making them.
Sure.
But 49ers coming off a great season, disappointing end, as they were Super Bowl favorites. They were among the contender Super Bowl favorites to make it. They made it, and Patrick Mahomes got him. And so tell us about last year. I mean, was there anything that didn't meet expectations in terms of regular season and then postseason?
Yeah, I don't actually think so. It kind of went, they didn't get off to the slow start that we've typically seen them get off to under Kyle Shanahan. It was just very workmanlike all season. I thought week one really set a tone. They went into Pittsburgh, and that was a game that I actually picked Pittsburgh. I thought that we've seen the Niners have a ton of slow starts. Like, they lost to the Bears to open 2022. I mean, seriously, like that's kind of where we've seen this team go. It was Brock Purdy coming off of major elbow surgery. He didn't really have an off season. He had a full training camp, but his reps were limited and he was taking a day off here and there. And I thought they were going to go into Pittsburgh and really struggle. And they just dominated that game just start to finish. It was like I said, very workmanlike. And that's just how they went about the regular season. They finished 12-5, 13-4, whatever they finished. So they lost some games, but there was never a point in the year where you went, this team is playing way below its standard. They lost week 7 and 8 consecutively to the Vikings and the Bengals.
And the Vikings, it was the 3 games in a row because you had
week 6 with the Browns as well.
That was the game where I felt like Brock Purdy kind of proved himself, because all the other times he's just managing all this talent. Mm-hmm. And while he had a bad game, he put them in a position to win, only have the rookie kicker, you know, miss.
Yeah, that was tough. But their third-round pick, by the way, 99th overall. 99th overall pick, can't pick a game-winning pick. Cool.
But in fairness, you know, Trent Williams was hurt. Deebo Samuel was not 100% in that stretch. And then the rest of the way was, you know, they rolled, except mm-hmm. for when Lamar Jackson and the Ravens sort of just dismantled them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the point that, again, I didn't take that Christmas Day game as, oh my God, the 49ers got exposed. It was just a, it was just evidence that, man, if they meet the Ravens in the Super Bowl, they're going to have a really hard time beating them. Because I didn't think there was a team in the NFC that could really hang with San Francisco last year. And if this is your first time listening to me talk, I'm not like a Niner homer. I'm pretty, pretty rarely super optimistic about them. But last year, you just kind of looked around the NFC and you see the Cowboys get blown out in the wild card round. You're going, okay, well, they should be able to handle the Packers, which they just barely did at home. And then the Lions, and it's like, okay, the Lions are good. Like, the Lions are a lot of fun, but, you know, they probably should have lost to the Rams, and then the Bucs really had a chance at them. So, you know, and then the Lions came in and punched them in the mouth for the first 30 minutes, and then the Niners did the opposite in the second half and just kind of took over that game. So, it wasn't a huge shock to me they got to the Super Bowl. It wasn't a huge shock to me that they lost to Patrick Mahomes. I just, you know, just to answer your question on kind of how the season went, it just, like, if you told me that's exactly how the year went, I wouldn't, there was nothing surprising to me. They were one of the best teams in the league. They didn't make the one or two plays they needed to make to beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. And now they're here again.
I mean, honestly, every year it seems like some opponent against Patrick, they're like, we should have beat him. Yeah, probably. But yep. That's why they're the Chiefs, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce. I mean, it was, you know, the Eagles a year ago, they hated Jonathan Gannon because of it. And it yep. turned out that Jonathan Gannon wasn't the problem. Though I will say one thing that was interesting because, I mean, the 49ers had an abundance of riches. It was, it was unfair. Like, you look at the roster and it's unfair the amount of talent that they have on both sides of the ball. Christian McCaffrey, not only, well, talent wise but then he goes and has one of the best seasons of his career. He's offensive player of the year, rushes for nearly 1500 yards. He's fantastic. You get Brandon Ayuk having a career year, over 1300 yards, finally looks like the guy. George Kittle gets back to over 1000 yards. And then defensively, you added Javon Hargrave. You've still got the best linebacking core. You got Nick Bosa. Although his sack production was only 10.5, but you got 7 sacks from Hargrave. Charvarius Ward looks fantastic. And
yeah, he was really good last year.
It was down the stretch that it felt like that the defense took a step back. After is that they were so good early on, and it yeah. felt like it was kind of like the Cardinals, like the 49ers boat raced in 45-29, but the Cardinals ran all over them, and it was and yes, they were without Eric Armstead, and were they without Hargrave that game too? Yeah, they were without Hargrave that game too, and so they complained, but after it looked like they broke the 49ers front seven, their run defense. And after that, it was, except for against the Commanders, because the Commanders were terrible, is that they had to score a lot of points. And that was not a problem because they could do it. Mm-hmm. But defensively, they seemed to take a step back after that game against the Cardinals.
Yeah, man. They had their issues defensively last year. And that's why we saw Steve Wilkes let go at the end of the season. No, it wasn't that, because when you go look at all the metrics, like, they were fine. But there were just certain things. There were, like, effort questions in the NFC Championship game, which is insane. There was the week 6, 7, and 8 stretch that we talked about where he's calling against the Vikings. The Niners just need to get into the half, and he's calling, like, a zero blitz and putting Charvarius Ward on an island with who's the cap from USC? Jordan Addison. And Addison beats him to the ball and takes it in for a touchdown in a scenario where the 49ers just needed to literally do anything other than let the Vikings score a touchdown. And if that doesn't happen, they probably win the game. And so all of that's to say, I think they had some schematic issues last year for sure, where Steve Wilkes did not, I think, view defense the way Kyle Shanahan did, in terms of the 49ers want to do everything up front. Everything runs through the front seven. And I don't think that the front seven and the secondary were tied together the way they need to be last year, which I think is part of the reason that you saw Nick Bosa's sack totals come down.
And then the totals go up after the you know, they went, because it was for five straight weeks, it was 59, 66, 88, 46, 70. And then the Cardinals, 234, 102, 62 to the Commanders, but 109, 136, 182, and 130 there for the rest of the season, including the postseason.
Yeah, they just don't, like, look, but the base element of why their run defense struggled last year is because Javon Hargrave is not a run stopper. Eric Armstead in week 13 tore his meniscus, MCL. He tore something in his knee. And when he is not on the field and fully healthy, the Niners run defense suffers a lot. It was a lot of Javon Kinlaw, who is I don't think a great NFL player. He gets, for a player as big as he is, he gets moved off his spot way too often. You know, God love Kevin Givens. He's a rotational defensive tackle in the NFL. And the Niners never had a functional enough defensive end opposite Nick Bosa. They went in with Drake Jackson, who's been really disappointing as a second round pick. He got hurt, I think, in week seven. He went down. Robert Beal, a rookie, was on IR for most of the season. They trade for Randy Gregory, who is a situational pass rusher at best. They trade for Chase Young, who, again, situational pass rusher at best, spent a ton of time looking the wrong way on run plays last year. They just didn't have the personnel, man. And I think the Cardinals certainly exposed that a little bit, but I think that it was bound to happen at some point just because they didn't have the horses up front. And I think that was a pretty significant problem, and I think that's why you saw them go overhaul that this offseason. They get two starting defensive tackles in Jordan Elliott from the Browns and Malik Collins from the Texans. They sign Leonard Floyd, who's been a really effective pass rusher the last few years. They sign him to a two-year deal. They go get Yeter Gross-Matos, former day two, relatively early day two guy in the draft from Carolina to play kind of like that interior pass rusher, but run stopper on the edge on rundowns. So I think they made a pretty concerted effort to overhaul that position group because it just wasn't good enough last year.
Now, we would be remiss to avoid the not talk about the guy that got all the talk last year, and that's Brock Purdy, who, you know, I don't know if you like. Say what you want about what the talent is, his ability. You can't deny that he was an MVP-level player all season, passing for nearly 4,300 yards, 31 touchdowns, only 11 interceptions, passer rating of 113. How good was he last year? Because everyone wondered, what does he do? After that second half of his rookie season, to have it to have it go into year two for the entire season, is there any doubt left about what he is as a quarterback?
I mean that not with this particular group of players.
Right.
I think an underrated part of last year was what I mentioned earlier. He had elbow surgery in the offseason. He tore his UCL in January.
There was talk of him having Tommy John surgery potentially.
Yeah. And he had a different procedure that wasn't full blown Tommy John, which is why he was back in July.
Right.
Or the end of July. But he didn't get an off season. He didn't get to work on being a quarterback. He was rehabbing his elbow right up until literally he missed the first day of training camp because it was a rest day from his rehab. That was why he wasn't in camp on the first day. So, I say all that to say the fact that he was as good as he was impressed me a lot because I had some really major questions about him in his first full season as a starter, particularly coming off the surgery, particularly because he didn't get an off season. And then he came out and lit it up the way that he did. And I thought that was really impressive. He set the Niners single season passing yards record.
The NFL now, it leads to that, but considering the history that the 49ers have at quarterback, Joe Montana, right. Steve Young, and who's the passer record for yards? It's Brock Purdy.
Brock Purdy. Who passed Jeff Garcia, by the way. Jeff Garcia held the record. he just statistically put together the best season we've ever seen a 49ers quarterback have. And I say, again, statistically, because if you put prime Steve Young into the Kyle Shanahan offense, he's throwing for 5,500 yards. Like, that's so that's it's not to say Brock Purdy is the best quarterback the Niners have had. It's not that. So please don't take it that way. But statistically, it was the best season by a 49ers quarterback ever. And there's something to that. That you're not bad at football and doing that. Like, there's a reason Nick Mullins didn't do that, and Jimmy Garoppolo didn't perform at that level. And you know, some people will point to Christian McCaffrey, but man, George Kittle looked like he was on the backside of his career, and he had 1,000 yards. Brandon Ayuk had a career year. Debo Samuel is still really good. So that has to do with Brock Purdy, who's better at pushing the ball down the field than anybody they've had under Kyle Shanahan. He makes the right decisions. He's more mobile. We saw that in the NFC title game. His legs really wound up winning the Niners that game. So I say, I answered your question. There's still questions about him as a quarterback, because A, I want to know what he looks like this year with a full offseason. Does he take some kind of leap, or was last year just kind of it? Where
not that was it, because that's really good.
Yeah, but right. But I just mean from a like growth standpoint, yeah. Is throwing blindly to the middle of the field going to lead to some interceptions just kind of through his whole career? Or does he eliminate some of those kind of, you know, as Pro Football Focus calls them, those turnover worthy plays?
Yes.
Because he still does that way too often. I think he panics in the pocket still too much sometimes. So there are definitely, and then I think if he can keep up this level of production in the post Debo Samuel, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey era, like if one of those guys, or if in 4 years, if all those players are no longer on the team, what does Brock Purdy look like? Is he still averaging 9.5 yards per attempt, or 9.3 per attempt, or whatever he was last year? Is he still throwing for nearly 5,000 yards? Is he still 30 plus touchdown? Like, that's the question I have. But for now, like, I'm not going to knock the guy because the team around him is good. You know, right. So I expect him to produce at a really, really high level this year.
And the thing that I think one of the other times I was on the show with you is saying that his strength is a perfect complement to what that offense needs. One, he's smart. He's got the talent, but his ability to be very, very accurate on mid-range throws is ungodly almost. Cause you gave me a number. What is it? Something like, is the second half of the rookie season, wasn't it something like 85%?
It was insane.
It was insane.
It was
ridiculous. It didn't really drop last year, did it?
He regressed a little bit for sure. But he was still like so good in that intermediate area of the field. And then if you're a Pro Football focused person, he was also one of the highest graded deep ball throwers in the league. Like, this isn't just a dink and dunk check down guy.
Okay. Well, said led the 49ers in passing. Of course he led the 49ers in passing air yards, but he had over 2,200 yards in air yards for his throws, for his passing yards.
That's crazy.
That's bonkers. All right, let's move on to the offseason. Coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Spencer of Cardinals Talk. Let's move on and talk about what the 49ers have done in the offseason. That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, best hour of Cardinals Talk on the web. The 49ers went through a lot of changes on the roster. Obviously, the skill players are still there offensively, although Brandon Ayuk is still unhappy. Do you think that's going to end well? It seemed like you've gone through this with 49ers players before. Debo Samuel kind of went through the same thing. Nick Bosa, you know, wasn't to the same extent, obviously. Ayuk going and telling Jaden Daniels that the 49ers don't want him. But is something going to end up happening with Ayuk, and how much do you think he's going to get paid?
Yeah, I think they're getting a deal done with Ayuk. That's been, if you go check Niners Wire, everything I've written about Brandon Ayuk includes that caveat, whether it's about a trade rumor or his meeting with the Niners or whatever it is. This is just the timeline the Niners operate on. And I think the urgency was ramped up with Ayuk in a way that it wasn't with like Debo Samuel or George Kittle or Fred Warner. There's one I'm missing in there. Samuel, Kittle, Warner. Doesn't matter. Anyways. This is just the timeline they get these deals done on. Nick Bosa. They go deep into training camp or deep into July, right up to the start of training camp or a little bit after the start of training camp with Bosa. He held out until the week the regular season started. This is just kind of the timeline they do business on. And the Ayuk urgency ramped up, I think, A, because of all the trade talks during the draft, and then B, because the wide receiver market reset and then reset and then reset like five or six times throughout this offseason. And you see Devontae Smith and Amon-Ra St. Brown and A.J. Brown and Justin Jefferson and Jalen Waddle and all these receivers getting paid. Meanwhile, Brandon Ayuk's over here talking on TikTok about how the Niners don't want it. And I get all those signs point to, wow, he's gone. He's out of there. But the bottom line is, I think the Niners have no interest in trading him.
Oh, it's felt like the Debo Samuel offseason again.
Yeah, but Debo's was even worse. Right. Like the Niners, look, Debo full blown requested a trade. The Jets picked tenth that year in the 2022 offseason. They picked 10th, and while they were on the clock, it was like a pre written Debo Samuel traded to Jets. Like that was a thing. The Niners had to fly to Debo to talk him down off the ledge. Meanwhile, you've got Brandon Ayuk requesting a meeting with the Niners. He's at the team facility working out, all this other stuff. So I think absolute worst case here, Ayuk plays out his rookie contract. Because the CBA makes it where if you don't play out your deal, you're in a way worse spot the next offseason. Yeah. So I think it absolute worst case, he plays out his rookie contract and they kick this can in the next offseason and potentially lose him for nothing.
Third round compensatory pick. But
yeah,
the 49ers get those like in droves every year because they keep getting their coordinators hired by other teams.
Right. So I think he gets like a 4-year deal where he's making 28 and a half per with, you know, second or third most guaranteed money. I think the Niners are waiting this out. I think Ayuk's waiting this out. And I think we get word of that deal late July, early August.
Makes sense. Lots of players changed teams from the 49ers. Mm-hmm. But if you look at some of them, it's not significant. I mean, their backup quarterback, Sam Darnold, goes to Minnesota. They released Eric Armstead, Oren Burks leaves, but he was their special teams third linebacker,
yeah.
Ross Dwelley, backup tight end, Cleveland Farrell, backup pass rusher, Randy Gregory, Sebastian Joseph Day, a guy they picked up late, Javon Kinlaw, Ray McLeod, Isaiah Oliver released, Matt mm-hmm. Pryor, Logan Ryan retires, Charlie Werner, and Chase Young. Is there, obviously Armstead's, is I would guess Armstead's loss is going to be the most impactful. Was there any loss that was like, I wish they didn't have to lose him?
Yeah, I think Armstead is that guy, but that's less to do with on-field production and more just like, oh, he could have been with the team for 10 years. That would have been a cool thing. The Niners have this thing called the 10-year wall. And there's only 51 players in the franchise history who have made it to that wall, and no player has done it since Joe Staley back in 2016. So that just would have been kind of a cool thing. But the losing Armstead is a big deal from a leadership standpoint, but he had been hurt a lot the last couple of years. He is a very, very good player. Don't get it twisted. I don't want this to come across like Eric Armstead isn't good. He is. The Jags got better because they have him. But I don't think he is so irreplaceable that the 49ers defense is going to look markedly different this year. I think in the aggregate, Malik Collins and Jordan Elliott can kind of just fill that void, and maybe some Kevin Givens. It's going to be an all hands on deck effort, but I don't think we'll see the Niners defense look demonstrably different with Eric Armstead gone. So to that point, I think that's probably their biggest offseason loss. And I'm not totally sure it's going to be super impactful.
And that was, you've already mentioned that. So Malik Collins had a great year for Houston last
mm-hmm.
year. Jordan Elliott, I've heard mixed things. I don't pay attention.
Yeah.
Is he good? Is he not good? But you definitely added some bodies to that.
I think he's better than Javon Kinlaw.
And that's probably fair. That's probably fair. As Kinlaw left and rejoins Robert Saleh, interestingly mm-hmm. enough, because he didn't do anything when Saleh was here. He was mostly hurt.
Yep.
And then you add some guys. Cardinals fans will kind of laugh, cry to see Josh Dobbs sign as the backup quarterback. Obviously, the big loss we didn't talk about was Dre Greenlaw and his Achilles tear during the Super Bowl. That was
brutal.
Oh my gosh! And then to see the after the Super Bowl and everything, to see the video clips of guys reacting to it. Fred Warner reacting to Greenlaw getting hurt because of all the, he's just running back to the field, falls over. That makes no sense at all.
Brutal.
They add Devondre Campbell, a guy that played for the Cardinals, was but then was great for the Packers and then wasn't so great. But I get a feeling that playing next to Fred Warner will be very, very good. Who of the guys that were added do you believe? And I think Leonard Floyd, that's, he's got 39.5 sacks over the last 4 years.
Yeah, it's been really
legitimate,
good.
Like what y'all wanted to see from Chase Young opposite Nick Bosa, you get someone that has actual, sustained production. He is good.
Yeah, man. I think Leonard Floyd is going to be the big one. I think I'm with you. Devondre Campbell's fine. I don't think he's going to be an all-pro like he was back in 2021. I don't think that player's there anymore. But I think if you're going to have somebody fill in for Dre Greenlaw, whether it's for half a season or a full season, there are worse players you could get. And I know they're really high on Jalen Graham and D Winters, who are two reserve linebackers who were rookies last year who didn't play a lot. But so I think they'll be okay there. Losing Dre Greenlaw definitely hurts. But Leonard Floyd is the one that he is a bona fide, like you just said, what was it, 39.5 sacks the last 4 years? I mean, he is a bona fide, go get the quarterback, pin his ears back on 3rd and 8 and will impact the pocket type of player. He just didn't have that last year. Chase Young had flashes. Randy Gregory had a flash or two, but it was never sustained. And I think that's something that Leonard Floyd is really, really going to help with. And I think that frees things up for Nick Bosa. I think it frees things up for Javon Hargrave. If it's Yetur Gross-Matos rushing from the inside, it should free some things up for him. So yeah, I think of the players that they brought in, I think Leonard Floyd is A, going to start for them opposite Nick Bosa, and B, I think be a really, really impactful player.
Anybody else of the additions? I think Logan Thomas at tight end is an underrated add late in the offseason.
A lot of former Cardinals.
Yes. Although I will say this, Logan Thomas was a Cardinal so long ago. So
2014, dude.
That's when he was drafted, and he was a freaking quarterback then. I mean, a terrible quarterback at that, but had one highlight, that 180-yard touchdown pass against the Broncos when he just lasered the ball into Andre Ellington over the linebacker.
Yeah, I will not. I remember that throw. That was outrageous. So on Logan Thomas, just real quick, from a him perspective. The fact that he was drafted as a quarterback, was really bad at it, left the league for 2 years, and then came back and has carved out just a really nice career as an effective tight end is amazing.
That's athleticism that he had, because he was a tight end when he started.
Incredible.
But yeah, his athleticism was unquestioned, and I'm really, it's really great that he's been able to have the career that he's had. So
yeah, man. Just amazing. What a guy. But he's a legitimate. The Niners have tried for a while. And this is something my podcast partner, Chris Biederman, and I talk about a lot. I don't know if this is just because Logan Thomas is a starting tight end in the NFL. He's one of the 32 best players at the position in the league, I think. So the Niners bring him in. This could mean one of two things. One, they want to be able to spell George Kittle. Because they've not Charlie Warner, who is their backup for the last 4 years, and Ross Dwelly, who is also a reserve tight end for the last 4+ years, are not good.
They're like number 3 tight ends on most rosters.
Thank you for putting that succinctly for me. So they're just dudes. They're fine. Logan Thomas is a legit threat and can legitimately fill in for George Kittle, particularly as a pass catcher. So I don't know if this is so they can get George Kittle off the field more often, because by the end of last year, by the Super Bowl, he was just beat to heck and he had core muscle surgery in the offseason. So maybe it's that. My thought process is Kyle Shanahan has been trying for a while to get a second pass catching tight end. They brought in Jordan Reed in 2020 and lo and behold, he had some injury issues. I'd only played, I think, like 8 games. But they also went, and when Austin Hooper was a thing, they tried to go get him and pay him like big money the same offseason or right after they had paid George Kittle. They went and tried to go get Austin Hooper when he was still a guy and George Kittle was in his prime. So I think this is something Shanahan's been trying to go towards for a while, where he can mix in more like 22 personnel or 12 personnel, where he's running two running backs, two tight ends in 22 or 12, which is a running back and two tight ends. I think he wants to be able to do that because it's just maximum deception. And that's his thing. He passes out of run formations. He runs out of passing formations. Like, that's just, it gets the defense thinking. And I think his defenses have gotten smaller and more, like, you saw the Chiefs in the Super Bowl were constantly, it's like four or five cornerbacks on the field. And I think Shanahan wants the ability to go two tight ends where they can just go big, just I formation, two tight end, and just go bully ball. But off of that, if you try and get big with your defense, now all of a sudden they can split Kyle Juszczyk and Christian McCaffrey out, and they have two pass-catching tight ends who are actual threats. And so I think we're going to see more of that from the Niners this year, more 22 looks, especially on like third and short or second and short and goal line situations. I think it's just a headache for defenses to have to try and cover all those guys. And now, oh, here's a backup tight end who had 55 catches and five touchdowns last year.
Yeah, legitimate talent at that, the position. It's really, really good. Then you go to the draft, and everyone was waiting. I'm sure you were too, for maybe you weren't, maybe you had more insight onto this, but everyone was waiting for the Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel trade. And then when they went and drafted Ricky Pearsall, we're like, oh, then it's deafening happened, but it didn't happen. One of the big surprises of the first round, Ricky Pearsall, a guy I'm familiar with because he played at Arizona State, was really exciting when he was here, and then, you know, took off to Florida when he could, because, you know, we were bad. We're bad here. But very versatile player, a guy that can kind of do everything. Isn't built like Deebo, but can do a lot of things in terms of versatility that Deebo offers.
Yeah, I thought that signaled to me more about where the 49ers are going than where they are. Because that was the reaction, right? Was the draft Pearsall in the first round. Oh, one of Samuel or Ayuk are getting traded. But it was really clear to me and to people I talk to who know things that the only way Ayuk was getting traded is if, like, they talked with Washington, right? I'm guessing those talks were with Washington where the Niners going, hey, can we have the number two pick? And Washington going, no, how about a second rounder? And the Niners going, no, we want a first. And that's kind of it. Like, it was really clear they wanted to get into, like, the top eight because they weren't getting Neighbors or Adunze or Marvin Harrison Jr., Arizona Cardinal. If they weren't getting one of those three guys, they weren't interested. So they needed, like, a top seven or eight pick. And when that went away, I think Deebo would have been available for, like, a mid-first. And I think teams were calling around. But I don't think they ever planned on trading one of those guys for anything more than what would have been a major fleecing. I think they've planned on having Samuel and Ayuk on the roster this year. The Pearsall pick, I think, has more to do with A, helping out their depth at that position.
Right.
Because if Samuel or Ayuk is out, it's Juwan Jennings steps in, who's fine. He's
very
a good player.
Very fine player.
Yeah. But after that, it was like nothing. It's like Ray McLeod is like a gadget player, punt returner. Ronnie Bell, a seventh round pick, is probably a career special teams guy. Danny Gray couldn't get off IR last year. They just didn't have the bodies. So I think Pearsall is a player they liked a lot. They bring him in to help their depth this year, where I think he'll cut into Juwan Jennings' snaps a little bit, but I think he'll return some punts and be a fourth receiver this year. But then next year, whether it's because they couldn't come to a deal with Ayuk, or they did come to a deal with Ayuk and they have to get rid of Deebo Samuel now, I think next year's the year where they're going to need another receiver. And I think Kyle Shanahan liked Ricky Pearsall a lot for a lot of the things that you listed out. He's tough. He can run all the routes. He can play all the positions. You can hand it off to him if you need to.
He throws the ball really well too.
Got that in his bag. We saw the Niners pull that out in the Super Bowl with the wide receiver pass. So, I think that's more about 2025 and beyond more than this year. And I never thought that one of Samuel or Ayuk were getting traded. And I still don't believe that's the case.
Second round, Renardo Green, cornerback. Third round, Dominic Puni. Offensive lineman, Malik Mustafa. Mm-hmm. Safety, running back, Isaac Garendo out of Louisville. In the fourth round, fast. Jacob Cowing out of Arizona, little and fast. Jarrett Kingston, a tackle in round six. And Tatum Bethune, linebacker in the seventh round.
Yep.
Do any of these guys figure into 2024?
Yeah, I think so. I mentioned Pearsall is going to be maybe the wide receiver three in some instances, but probably a four. I think Renardo Green has a legitimate chance to start at one of the cornerback spots. If you go watch his tape, Doug Farrar, who's our colleague at the NFL Wires, is a huge Renardo Green guy. Him and Greg Cosell both love Renardo Green. And if you go turn on his tape against LSU, where he just puts Malik Nabers in a padded cell for four quarters, it's really hard to not be a Renardo Green guy. he's a dog. Pre-draft analysis of him was all over the board. But if Doug and Greg Cosell like a guy, then I have a hard time believing that they're not going to contribute at least a little bit. So he has a legitimate chance to start. And I think Dominic Pooney's the other guy who probably should start at right guard for the 49ers this year. They might give him a shot at tackle, but I would bet that he's going to be their starting right guard to try and shore up that spot.
I mean, between Feliciano and Burford, it's very unremarkable.
It's thin. Yeah. But Feliciano was really good last year, but I don't think you want to go into a year with John Feliciano is like your surefire starting right guard. That's probably not a great spot to be. So I think Pooney will start this year. And Malik Mustafa is a player I like a lot. I don't think he's going to play a ton with Talanoa Hufanga being back from a torn ACL and Jair Brown
was really good last year.
Yeah. He was solid. So I think he's going to start and play a ton, but Malik Mustafa is a player I really like. And I think if he doesn't have an impact this year, I think he will down the line for sure.
Coming up next on the Rise of Spirit podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. We'll move ahead to 2024 and expectations and hopes and dreams for this coming season. That's coming up next on Rise of Spirit. We're back on the Rise of Spirit podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web, talking to Kyle Madsen of Niners Wire. We've gone over last season and the offseason. The 49ers, last I checked, were the Super Bowl favorites in right ahead of the Chiefs, right ahead of the Ravens. How do you feel about that being the favorites for this year?
I think it's fine. It just like the 49ers have been good enough for long enough now that the preseason analysis stuff doesn't move me anymore. I don't, it gets nice that they're the favorite. It's nice that Pro Football Focus calls them the best roster in the league and ESPN says they have the best roster in the league. And they're the betting favorite at whatever sports book you want to go look at. They're over under their win total is as high as anybody's. Great. they should be there and in the mix and making a deep playoff run again. But it's like when you've run into the NFC Championship game wall or Super Bowl wall four times in the last five seasons, it's hard to be super, thrilled by the idea that they're a preseason favorite, because it's like, yeah, they should be. It's just kind of what they are now. And I think the NFC is going to be tough this year. Yeah. You know, pick your NFC North team that is going to be really good. I think the NFC West has a chance to be really, really good top to bottom.
Quietly.
Yeah.
Remade themselves. They went from a team that was aging to having now, we'll see what happens without it, Aaron Donald, but that team has very good young talent at a lot of spots.
Yeah, and you got a new head coach in Seattle. I think Michael McDonald's a heck of a coach, and he's going to have that defense playing really well. I like the direction the Cardinals are heading. Like the NFC West might just be six really tough games for everybody in the division. It's great that they're, still got this awesome roster and all that, but like, dude, if it doesn't result in a Super Bowl, then it just doesn't matter.
Right. Is it that point for fans? Is it sort of championship or bust, or is making the Super Bowl still satisfactory? Obviously you don't want to lose in the Super
Bowl.
But is the fan base, are they going to start making noise about Shanahan if they don't win one?
It started after Super Bowl 54. It's like, wow, he was the offensive coordinator in the 28-3 Super Bowl, and now this? Man, this guy sucks. Like, that was just like, that's, I worked in radio in San Francisco, and that was calls the Monday after the Super Bowl. We're like, is it time to fire Kyle Shanahan? Like, they just went to the Super Bowl. What are you talking about? And then 2020 was a disaster, but then 21, they were a Jaquaski Tart dropped interception from beating the Rams in LA. In 2022, I don't know if they would have beat the Eagles if Brock Purdy was healthy, but when you see how that game went this past season in Philly, I like their chances to win that NFC title game in Philly if Brock Purdy stays healthy. And then this year, you know, they were up 10 on the Patrick Mahomes Chiefs. They had him in a 4th-and-1 in overtime, and Nick Bosa, for some reason, chases the running back instead of hanging out and waiting for Patrick Mahomes to pull the read option. I could just, there's all these things you can point to where they've gotten so close. And man, if they go to the Super Bowl again and lose again, I don't think there's going to be, I have friends, dude, check this out. I have friends who work in media, like in radio, who are like just now, like, okay, I can think about football again.
Oh,
if they lose another one, I don't know how anybody's going to recover, particularly the team. Like, you can only face plant just shy of your goal so many times before it starts to mentally mess with you.
The big picture, like Super Bowl twice in 5 years, NFC champion, like, NFC
oh, it's incredible run.
Big pick, it's incredible. But in the moment, I could see it being kind of a reason of a team quickly falling apart.
Yeah, dude, that's very much on the table, man. Hey, that's why I would bet the Niners under this year. Maybe they go over, maybe they go 14-3 and they are just rock solid, super tough. They know what it takes, and they know that this is their last ride as a core, so they're gonna get after it. Maybe, but also maybe they lose week 1 and then the doubt sets in and everybody's looking at Brandon Ayuk and going, hey, you only had a catch for 6 yards, you held out. Debo, what are we, you know, is he staying or going? What's the deal here? Oh, Brock Purdy's going to get paid. And then all of a sudden, all this other stuff starts creeping in that instead of focusing on this goal, everybody starts looking ahead to next season where things are going to look a lot different. And now all of a sudden, that's where that downward spiral comes. And now you have this loaded roster that finishes 9-8 missing the playoffs. Ooh. Like, it happens. It can happen.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, man,
I don't think it'll happen. I think that I think this year the focus will remain. I think if they don't make it all the way, like if there's a playoff failure or a Super Bowl loss, I think that's where things get hairy for next year. But I think between the talent of McCaffrey, the level of play of Purdy, that offensively it's going to be really hard to take that much of a step back offensively. And you still have arguably the best pass rush in football. You've got the best linebacker in football. You've got one of the best cornerbacks in football. And your duo of Hufanga and Jair Brown are a formidable duo at safety. You've got so much talent. And then you added Leonard Floyd to that. I mean,
They should be good. Like, they should be. but like I said, look, if they go 15-2 and lose in the first round, nobody's psyched. If they go 15-2 and losing the Super Bowl, like, nobody's psyched. If they go 10-7 and win the Super Bowl, everybody's fired up. Like, it's kind of reached that point for this team.
Been good for too long. They've been too good for too long, and you want something to show for it.
Yeah, man. Especially because this isn't a Patriot situation where it's been Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and it's different players and they're moving in and out and the team looks a little different. Like, it's been largely the same core since 2019.
And then you look at the question is what happens when Purdy gets paid? Cause he's going to get paid whether they wait till year 4. But he's going to get paid, which is going to change the roster a lot.
Yes.
And that's going to be obvious. So you've given the worst case scenario that you think worst case, like they kind of fall apart and be a 9-win team. Obviously, sure. The ceiling is the Super Bowl. Do you predict a Super Bowl appearance / win?
Here's why I don't. I wouldn't. No, because it's happened once since the turn of the century. where a team has lost a Super Bowl and gone back, and that was the Patriots in 2011.
Long time ago.
It was a while ago. So I don't. Was it? No, it's the Eagles Super Bowl. They lost to the Eagles and then beat the Rams the next year. I guess how that went. Yeah, but anyways, it doesn't matter.
It's because it was the. Doesn't matter. To Nick Foles. Come on.
I know, dude, just brutal. But no, so it just doesn't happen anymore. Like it's so tough to do now. And I think only 8 teams have ever done it where they've lost the Super Bowl and then gone back the next year. It's something
Half of them were the Bills.
Yeah. Right. No, that's 8 total, but the Bills did it 4 times themselves. Yeah, man, I just don't. They have all the pieces for sure. But history tells us it doesn't happen. And with how good Green Bay might be, with how good you mentioned the Rams, the AFC by itself, you know, in the Super Bowl is going to be tough. But it's even getting there. Detroit, Green Bay, the entire NFC West, I think is going to be tough. Like I said earlier, I don't think there's a lot of an easy road for San Francisco. And they got a tough schedule this year too, man. So I'm not betting on a return just because A, the odds are stacked against them, and B, history is stacked against them as well.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Seahawks podcast. The 49ers opponent preview. Well, the opponent preview with the 49ers with Kyle Madsen. You can find Kyle's stuff over at NinersWire.com and on X/Twitter. What's your handle?
Kyle A. Madsen, yeah, Madson.
There we go. Yeah, awesome, man. Kyle, it's always a pleasure, man. I love when I have you on. And the good thing is I'll get to have you on twice during the regular season. All right,
always
man.
A ton of fun.
Take care.
Appreciate you. Anytime. Right.
We'll be back again soon. Thanks, guys, for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.